Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We kick things off with keeping you in shape by chatting with celebrity trainer Tony Martinez, talking about staying fit during the winter months. Up next is author James Arena talking about his new book, The First Legends of Disco. To coincide with that, we speak to a founding member of the legendary disco group Chic, Alpha Anderson, who talks about what it was like to be part of such a prolific band that played to thousands of fans all around the world. We wrap things up talking to American singer-songwriter Plug-In Stereo and listen to his latest single, To Be Wanted.
Capture your need for sound.
We are thrilled to have back on the show an awesome fitness trainer who works with the likes of Britney Spears, the Jonas Brothers, and Pink, not to mention his work with Janet Jackson. You can learn all about him on his website, trainertonymartinez.com. Tony, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, thanks, Kat, for having me back on your show.
So, Tony, a lot of people might be coming off the high, I guess, that was their New Year's resolution. I think a lot of people decide that they're going to get fit for the new year. How does someone actually keep themselves motivated now that the excitement of getting healthy may have actually worn off?
Well, the thing is right now is try to basically make a schedule. That's my number one tip. Make a schedule to exercise and have a workout plan for your best needs. Also, get for your number two tip, I would say, is schedule a food plan. What you're eating, like a food journal, so it helps you out what you're going to eat or what you're eating as well. And also, I think one thing is, let's just have fun. I think that's the main thing of all, of having fun, to motivate yourself, to be motivated. That's the thing, to be dedicated and motivated.
Do you suggest that people, with regards to the food plan and stuff, that they take it and then take it to a dietitian or something to help them sort of figure out what they need to be doing, or do you think they can actually figure it out on their own?
You know, actually, everybody's different. So I would do both. I would give it to a dietitian to work on your calorie intake, your right amount of protein, carbohydrates, and fat, as well as there's a lot of online things as well to understand it. But I think a dietitian would be good.
Do you think a lot of, you know, January joiners, as we call them, you know, sometimes overcommit to their fitness goals and then they get discouraged and then just sort of fall off completely?
You know, I can see that because, you know, everybody wants to lose, like, say, for instance, 30 pounds in one day, and that's just impossible. I mean, the winter months aren't for hibernating, okay? It's to get off that couch and, you know, have some fun functional exercises so you can become the best health yourself. I think, if anything, there's no time, you know, like to have, you know, to brush up. I mean, oh my gosh, I'm totally going crazy. I'm sorry. I think basically we just need to, you know, enjoy the moment at the same time, but not to get too discouraged.
For someone who, you know, might decide that they want to get active after maybe months or years of being quote unquote sedentary, what are some realistic expectations for them as they try to get on this train of being healthy?
Well, realistic goals, I think, start off with 10 minutes. I mean, nowadays you can get a great 10-minute workout sufficient for, you know, you're not overtraining your body, just start in small increments. You don't need to go for an instance, you have to run a marathon to lose all this weight, which is good. I mean, some marathon runners do that, but for instance, someone that's just starting out, just start off slow, take a walk, do some push-ups on your knees, do some crunches, just something really easy to get yourself motivated to go to the next goal where, say, for instance, you want to either lose a pound a week by eating correctly, and also gaining some muscle.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is fitness trainer Tony Martinez, who works with Britney Spears and Janet Jackson. Make sure to follow him on Twitter, @TrainerTony. And again, check out his website, trainertonymartinez.com. Tony, depending on where you live in the world right now, you know, it's winter for a lot of us. And I think the colder weather on some level can actually make you want to eat more. What do you do to sort of deal with that and curb that?
The eating plan. I mean, that's why I keep saying this over and over and over again. I keep saying smart nutrition is half the battle. Basically, if you could just watch your portion size and eat healthier, nutritious foods, this will make you a smarter eater. That's your number one key right there. And then from there, the exercise component is where you just start off slow. Let's even walk on the treadmill or walk out, you know, or you can even do anything inside. You don't have to be inside a gym. It could be in your home as well, too. You can lift water bottles. You can use my Tony Martinez Fit travel bag. Very good. And then you could use And you could use a lot of other materials you have in the house if you don't want to go outside in that cold weather.
How important is protein when it comes to getting in shape? Because I know some people think, you know, you load up on the carbs. Other people say don't do the carbs. And then you always hear the word protein in there. What should protein play in your healthy plan?
Protein, for my clients, I have it for recovery. For instance, you know, all my clients that are entertainers that are performing, I want them to have a higher doses of protein so they can recover a little bit better. But at the same time, it makes them feel good. It makes them feel fuller as well, too.
I wanted to ask you as well about reality TV weight loss shows, for example, like The Biggest Loser. I think a lot of people get inspired by shows like that, which on some level I think is fine. But is it really a good place to get your motivation from? Because I think some people don't realize all the work that's going on behind the scenes as opposed to the 1 hour that you watch on television.
Yeah, I think for instance, it's motivating to a certain degree. I just don't like, me personally, people yelling. I mean, I would never yell at any of my clients to get what I want. I think there's another way to do it. For me, it's more humor, to have fun with them, to make it more lighthearted, to get the best out of the client, and to have fun. I think that's the main thing, is just to have fun. Have a friend workout. If you have a dog, walk with your dog, something that motivates you.
Now, I have to ask you this. The last time you and I spoke, which was in the fall, you were actually getting Britney Spears, you know, ready for her residency in Las Vegas. I wanted to ask you how it was sort of in the immediate run-up to getting her on stage at the end of December. Was there a lot of extra work you had to do to just sort of make sure she was healthy and strong and ready to go?
You know, she was ready already. She was pretty fit. She is one of those tremendous extreme athletes that is really, really focused in her exercise where, she wants to be in shape. And I put her through the grind. I put her through tons of intervals. And she was just like, this is nothing. I'm ready for this. So her cardio level and strength was extreme at a high level.
I wanted to ask you as well, you know, you and I have talked before about your work with Janet Jackson and, you know, her dancing on stage. And obviously, Britney does a lot of that as well. What, I guess, body parts are you concerned about with the fact that they're grinding it out on stage so much? And sometimes in footwear, that is not really great. It's like, you know, these 6-inch platforms. Is it like knees and ankles you're concerned with, or lower back?
I'm actually all of that. The knees, ankles, low back. I really stretch them out before and after, because I want their flexibility at a good rate, because they're moving around the whole entire time. And those high heels, as you know, it's hard on your feet, on your calves. So I just make sure I stretch them out and, you know, make sure that her flexibility is good.
For someone like a Britney or a Janet, is it important for them to not only stretch out but get treated by massage therapists and stuff, because I'm assuming they're overworking their muscles so much?
That's exactly what we get. We get actually massage therapists, chiropractors. We need more blood flow going through them as well, because that's going to help them balance their bodies out a little bit more. And actually, it helps them perform as well, too.
How important is, for example, Britney's food intake over the course of this residency? Like, you know, she's got to grind it out for several months. Is it important for her to really sort of be aware of how much water she's drinking and what types of food she's putting in?
She's pretty good about that. She knows exactly what to eat. She knows what gives her energy. You know, she loves the chicken, the yams, especially before a show. She also knows that she definitely has to be hydrated. She doesn't want to cramp up, because you got to understand those lights that are on you, they're extremely, extremely hot. At the same time, she doesn't want to be drinking too much water, because she doesn't have much time for bathroom breaks because of all her quick change.
And speaking of water, how important is water, Tony, to people who are you know, working out just maybe a half hour or 45 minutes a day? Because I think a lot of people get into these energy drink situations, and I feel like that's not really the answer.
No, it's not. I mean, some of it's just more flavor. I think they just want to change it up a little bit. To some extreme, I could see that, but I would go for more of a low-calorie one. Or if anything, water is your best bet out of all those energy drinks. Water is what your body is made of. 70% of your body is made of that. So that's the most highest component that you'll need to hydrate yourself.
What tip do you want to leave my listeners with, Tony, as we sort of march towards spring? And again, I know a lot of people are coming off that high of deciding to get fit for 2014. So what would you tell them as motivation?
Motivation, do something that you enjoy so you don't get bored. That's my number one rule. Number two is mix up your workout. Either you can do boxing, resistant band training, running on a treadmill, walking, cycling, just mix it up. I would also say, just remember, you want to exercise to energize yourself. And remember, this will help release your I call them happy hormones. Helps you release stress, increase your energy level as well, too.
Tony, thank you so much. It's always so great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Shelly. Appreciate it.
That's fitness trainer Tony Martinez. Again, you can check him out on Twitter, @TrainerTony. And again, his website as well, TrainerTonyMartinez.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Even though some people think disco is a dirty word, in reality, it is a genre of music that still continues to bring a lot of joy to people, even in its 40th year of existence. Joining us on the show is author James Arena, who's written a book about the disco era called The First Legends of Disco, and it is a fascinating read into the history of the genre. James, welcome back to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, Kelly, thank you so much for having me.
So you and I actually spoke not that long ago about another book you wrote, The First Ladies of Disco. And, you know, I want to ask you why you decided to go back into this genre of music and keep exploring it.
Well, I kind of figured as I was writing First Ladies of Disco, I figured one book was not going to be enough. And so even before I had finished that book, I had started work on the second follow-up book. Originally, I intended the second book to be the men of disco, some of the groups and male artists. And the book, First Legends of Disco, does focus on quite a few of the gentlemen, but there was room for a couple of more of the women because there were a few that I had missed in the first book or wasn't able to reach in time, and I wanted to make it very inclusive. And I think this new book is really great because I have a mix of artists, producers, DJs. They're all in the second book, and I think it's an even broader look at disco music than the first book.
How did you go about creating the list of artists that you wanted to cover, you know, in this volume? Obviously, you had quite, I'm sure, the process of trying to, you know, cull down the ladies that you were going to deal with. But how did you figure out this one?
It was pretty much the same process. A lot of it was recommendation from the artists themselves. Once they did their interview and read their chapters, I think they rather enjoyed them, and they started recommending other artists come to me and be a part of the project. So word of mouth was a very big factor in this. It's also the artists that I loved deeply growing up and throughout the years. Many of these are my favorites of all time, and I was just very blessed that they took a liking to me and wanted to tell their stories to me and liked the idea of being gathered together with other great artists in one book. So between the two books, First Ladies of Disco and First Legends of Disco, I have 72 artists in there, which is pretty remarkable, and I'm really proud of it. I think it's a great ensemble.
As a whole, how would you categorize these or characterize these artists, you know, even in both books, you know, specifically the one we're talking about now, The First Legends of Disco, but do they embrace the fact that disco put them on the map, or do some of them sort of shy away from, you know, having that word associated with them?
Although that cropped up in First Ladies of Disco, most of the women in First Ladies of Disco felt very positively about disco. And I have to say every last one of these artists in both books feel positively about disco. But that being said, I did notice in First Legends of Disco, especially among the men, that there was a little bit of reluctance to be classified as disco. I think they feel that in some ways that name disco pigeonholed them too much and made it difficult for them to be accepted in other forms of music. And while they embrace disco and know that it pays the bills and know that they had tremendous accomplishments and that that music gave them their fame, I think some people have a little bit of a problem with just being classified as solely disco. But again, I have to emphasize, they were all thrilled to be in this book and nobody had a problem with being classified as a legend or a first lady of disco.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is author James Arena. He's written the book, The First Ladies of Disco, and as well, The First Legends of Disco, which we're talking about now. And you can follow James on Twitter, not only there, but also on Facebook as well. Just put in his name in the Facebook search. Now, James, one of the most prominent groups, I would say, from the disco era is Chic. You actually focus a chapter in this book, The First Legends of Disco, on Alpha Anderson, one of the original founding vocalists, and also you have discussions with Lucy Martin. Do you think that Chic was perhaps the gold standard for groups in that era?
I absolutely do. I would also like to mention that in the first book, First Ladies of Disco, we also have Norma Jean Wright who was in the original lineup of Chic. So between the two books, I have Chic very well covered. But I do feel Chic was an amazing innovator and a groundbreaking group from the disco era. Their music is among the most popular and recognizable from that time, and these Nile Rodgers and all the people that are associated with this group really did an amazing job of bringing this music to life and making it a crossover sensation and having hits that last until this very day. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't know the song Good Times or La Freak, and you play 2 seconds of that song and everybody knows it. And I think after 40 years, I think that's, or 35 years, that's a pretty big testament to the power of their music.
What's your take on Nile Rodgers and the fact that he's had a career resurgence, if you will? Obviously, he's done production for many, many years and has worked with lots of great artists, including Madonna. But he's done work most recently or most notably with Daft Punk and Pharrell Williams, specifically on the song, Get Lucky, which was a huge track for summer 2013, or even just the year of 2013, which kind of almost sounds a little Chic-esque, if you will. So what's your thoughts on him and his place in history?
Well, when I heard that song, the first thing that came into my mind, and I'm not even sure I realized Nile Rodgers had produced it when I first heard it, but the first thing I thought was, wow, that sounds like a song Chic could have sung back in the day. So it's pretty incredible. He he's gone through periods where he hasn't been around, and then all of a sudden, bam, he's back on the scene bigger than ever. It is really a testament to his talent and creativity and the fact that he just knows how to tap into a sound that, enthralls the masses. He did it in the disco era, and he's doing it today in the 21st century. That's pretty remarkable.
Now, when you look over the book, The First Legends of Disco, obviously, I'm sure every chapter is important to you. I'm sure that it all speaks to you. But is there, an artist that you spoke to or a member of a group that you spoke to that really was a treat for you to have a chat with and get that chapter done?
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to just pinpoint one, but a couple that come to mind, the discussion I have in the book with Sister Sledge, speaking of Chic and Nile Rodgers, that was another one of his groups that were enormously popular with We Are Family. Getting to speak to some of those members of that family, the Sledge Sisters, was amazing for me. I also got to speak to Sarah Dash, who was in the original Patti LaBelle group, LaBelle, which everybody knows for Lady Marmalade. That was pretty incredible. George McRae, Rock Your Baby fame, boy, just the number of people in this, Bonnie Pointer, Randy Jones of the Village People, the gentleman from Crown Heights Affair. I also got to speak to Dennis LePage, who was the innovator of the group Lime, and very, very difficult person to reach, and that was a real coup to get him in the book. So, I have to say the whole experience of doing this book and the one before it was absolutely remarkable for me to actually speak to these people and have them tell me their stories and get them down and put them all together and have them embrace the book and support it. It's like a dream, Kelly. Sometimes I can't believe it actually happened to me, and I'm so thrilled that I was able to do this.
Now, it's funny, I'm a huge fan, like all my listeners know that, I'm a huge fan of Janet Jackson and sort of that 90s dance sound. And, I just can imagine what it would be like to have been in your shoes to interview all of these people, because it's such a thrill for me when, I've been able to speak with Martha Wash or with CeCe Peniston, Crystal Waters, those types of artists. What is going to be next for you because you've done, something that probably was a dream come true for you?
I've built up such momentum and enthusiasm personally, and I'm so pleased with how the books have been received and the enthusiasm that I received from the artists. The artists come to me and actually thank me for doing this, which, I'm thanking them, but they come to me and say they can't believe I did this, and that they're so grateful for the opportunity to have told their story in a lasting form like a book. I would like to continue, and I'm going to actually, I think, move into the 80s now and start tackling some of the dance music artists from the 80s from Europe and the United States, and I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully I can get another book out by the end of the year or early next year, and I'm just going to try to keep the momentum going. I have to say it's a tough business to be in the writing business and trying to make a book successful in today's marketplace and the economy. It is brutal, But the satisfaction I get from doing these books is just tremendous. So I'm going to keep going and stay positive.
Which is fantastic, and I look forward to the next book. And I wanted to ask you, you know, like you said, you've now forged these relationships with a bunch of these disco acts, if I can put it in those broad terms. And we've discussed that this is sort of like the 40th anniversary almost with regards to the era of disco really starting. Where do you want to see these artists go? Obviously, a lot of them are getting up in age and stuff. But do you think there's still some good times to be had celebrating?
Absolutely, Kelly. Absolutely. You know, I'll just mention that coming in this May, for example, we have a very large AIDS benefit taking place. I believe it's the AIDS Assistance Program. They're doing a huge show based on the books in Palm Springs in May. And many of the stars like Martha Wash, Franz Jolie, Maxine Nightingale, several others are going to be appearing, Linda Clifford, they're going to be appearing at this show. And when you see these people perform live, it is absolutely incredible. These women and gentlemen have amazing energy, incredible voices. I recently heard George McCrae sing, my gosh, he sounds exactly like his original records from 1974. It's incredible. They have great charisma, great professionalism, and they are not to be missed. Don't let ageism or fears that these people may be so-called too old or something get in the way of seeing them. They are wonderful performers, and they do an amazing job, as good as anybody who's younger who's out there today.
And I wanted to ask you this. Obviously, I think it's been so great in both books, the first Ladies of Disco and the first Legends of Disco. You actually, you know, make the time to mention some of the artists who have passed away, some of them way too young, you know, in their 40s and even earlier. Is there an artist or a few members of groups that have passed away that you wish you could have talked to? I know in the past we've mentioned Donna Summer, but is there someone else that sticks out to you that you really wish you could have got to before they passed?
I sure do. Actually, the whole reason I started writing these books was I originally intended to do a biography of the late singer Andrea True. Andrea True, I very bizarrely, was an adult film star and a singer back in the 70s, and I was fascinated by her story. She had the hit single More, 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 and I was very close to reaching her, and I was going to try to coordinate with her to do a biography about her, and she passed away, and that just absolutely devastated me, and that kind of got me into the mode of thinking that it would be great to do a book on more of these singers, maybe not just one, just gather all of them together and do it now while everybody is still vibrant and healthy and have great memories, and now's the time to do it, and so that's exactly what I did.
And before I let you go, James, where can people get a copy of your book?
Most important of all, right? You can get these books at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. If any of your listeners are overseas, there's a great site called BookDepository.com, which ships free anywhere in the world. Both books, First Legends of Disco, First Ladies of Disco, they're both available on all these websites. And I hope people will go out, get them, and learn more about these singers and enjoy the stories that they have to tell. I think they're going to learn a lot from these books.
Fantastic. James, as always, thank you so much. And I'm really proud of you for doing this, because I think a lot of people really appreciate that you would take the time to do a book or do books on this genre of music. So thank you.
Kelly, that's very kind of you. And I thank you for the time and giving me a chance to tell your listeners all about them.
That's author James Arena, again, author of the books, The First Ladies of Disco, and of course, The First Legends of Disco. And again, follow him on Twitter and of course, on Facebook, James Arena.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's such an honor to speak with an amazing artist and performer who is an original member of the groundbreaking group Chic. Alpha Anderson was an original vocalist with the group and sang on such memorable tracks like La Freak, Good Times, and Dance, Dance, Dance. Alpha, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. My pleasure to be with you today.
So can we talk a little bit about your career history? I understand that before Chic even sort of came about, you were friends and worked sort of closely with singer Luther Vandross.
Yes, yes. Luther was like my mentor. So we worked a lot. We sat and dreamed and had visions of what our careers were going to be about when we were famous. We sat and practiced how we would get in and out of a limousine. Talking about dreams, you know?
That is fantastic. That is awesome. And what was it like watching his career take off and turn out to how it turned out? Because he was such a prolific artist for so many people.
He was, and it seemed meteoric, but it wasn't, because I was with him when he was working really, really hard in the trenches trying to make it happen. And then all of a sudden it clicked. You know, people really began to appreciate his sound and his voice, and to watch it was just absolutely amazing, because he realized the dream that we used to sit and talk about. So I was extremely happy for him. He was a very, very dear friend. And there's still something missing in my life with him not here, and is that voice is missing from the airwaves as well. So it was an absolutely wonderful experience to watch him, but also to be a part of it, for him to say, come on, I want you to do this with me, be a part of my entourage, work with me, you know. So that just made it even better.
What was it like actually being on tour with him, Alpha? Because I understand that you did that with him.
Yes, I did. It was wonderful. We had such great treatment. He, you know, he has such a love for singers and for vocalists. So he would make sure that we were treated well. He made sure that that our sound was good. And I mean, in things like that. Sometimes background singers don't always get what they're supposed to get. But Luther would always say that he didn't want anybody on stage with him singing background or actually in the band that could not have their own record.
Oh, wow.
He loved to surround himself with people that he felt were very strong with what he did, because he understood that you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Right.
He really understood that, and he was not threatened by that. You
that
know,
is
that
amazing.
That he reveled in that. It really bolstered him. And we all encouraged each other to do better, to dig deeper, to give more. So it was a real learning experience for me, a very pleasurable learning experience, I might add.
What was it like, you know, to sort of go from working with him to sort of heading off to Chic? How did that come about?
Oh, well, Luther asked me to sing background on the first Chic album. So I think it was Luther, David Lasley, Robin Clark, and Diva Gray sang background on that first album, and they were getting ready to tour, and they asked Luther to come and join, and he of course asked me to go, and it was quite an experience. It was my first time doing anything on that level, and at the time knew I loved the music, but had no idea that it was going to be a phenomenon that just really swept not only the country but the world. So it was absolutely wonderful to be there on stage providing that type of tour support and to receive the love from the fans night after night.
Was it a whirlwind? Like, were you able to actually take in what was going on, or was everything just so crazy in you know, in the prime of those days?
It was a whirlwind. You know, particularly when Norma Jean left to pursue a solo career, and I had to step in to fill those really big shoes, mm-hmm. metaphorically speaking, of course,
mm-hmm.
to fill her shoes, because she had done such an excellent job. And when I became lead singer, co-lead singer with Lucy Martin, Luther went back to pursue his own career. So my mentor was gone. And it was a little daunting at first, mm-hmm. but it was very much, to speak to your question, it was very much a whirlwind activity. As a matter of fact, I have a girlfriend who like sort of remembers everything and documented everything, and she can tell me things that happened that I don't even remember.
Wow.
Because it was very fast. You know, that was a quick rise to the top, and we traveled. I mean, I've seen hotels and venues around the world, but don't really remember being out, you know, doing touristy type things. It was fun. It was a quick ride. And I just, some things I don't remember about it, because that does happen. And you wonder, you know, you're making history, but you don't know you're making history.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. And I think a lot of artists that have that sort of meteoric rise get trapped in that whirlwind, and they don't even know the influence that they have on the people around them and the fans around the world, because you're in this bubble.
Absolutely. Definitely in the well, I do have a couple of people that sort of burst that bubble for me. It always happens, you know. First, one of my good friends went to college together, and I was so excited about the record. And she says, "Well, you know," she's always been an activist.
Okay.
So she said, "Well, look, that's all well and good, but what are you doing to lift people up? You're singing and dancing. you know, what are you doing to make the world a better place? And I felt bad about it for a while, and I thought about it. But in retrospect, and now I understand that music is really one of the, music is one of the things that unites people, and it does lift us outside of ourselves.
Oh,
outside
for
of
sure.
ourselves, and that's the purpose of art.
Yes, and I, you know? And I have to tell you, like, if there's one song that gets people on the dance floor that don't even belong on the dance floor, it's La Freak. So I
Great.
Think we've done a lot of for the human condition, so don't you worry about that. I wanted to ask you, you know, when everything was sort of percolating, if you will, with Chic and sort of things getting ready to go, did you have an innate sense, Alpha, that this was going to be something big?
I felt it when I went into the studio and heard the music. I said, this is really, really special. And I really wanted to be a part of it. That's how special I felt it was. I felt it in my spirit or in my heart. When we got ready for the tour, not quite so much because it was a lot of work. Intellectually, I could see it, but in real time, it was a lot of work.
Okay, for sure. I can only imagine what those sessions were like trying to put the stage show together. And when you would go out in front of all these thousands of people, like how was the group? Like, were you like a cohesive unit that was sort of going out to do this together?
Yeah, because we all suffered, and I only found this out later, but we all suffered from stage fright.
Okay.
So we would huddle together, and we would go out together as one. And we buoyed each other, you know. We really would bolster each other as we worked. And as a matter of fact, one of the impromptu things that happened on stage is that Lucy and I would sort of circle around and get behind Niall and Bernard. And then one particular night, we just decided to walk from one side of the stage to the other as a group, you know. And the audience went absolutely wild, and we decided to keep that in. But each of us was afraid. You know, not in that sense, but just a little stage fright. But as the late, great Pete Seeger says, getting nervous and having a little stage fright only means that you have respect for your audience.
Right. This is true. I would definitely agree with you on that. Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is artist Alpha Anderson, formerly of the group Chic. And you can follow her on Facebook and Twitter. Just make sure to look out for her name. Now, Alpha, as an artist who had so much success in the disco era, does it bother you that sometimes people make disco out to be a fad or something that really isn't that important?
You know, it doesn't, because our records were so successful. The ones that were successful were huge hits, and there's no way that can ever be erased from music history. So, and I think our music transcended disco. You know, for those people that really listen to all of the stuff that we do, I don't think it's our music. As a matter of fact, I felt that when I went into the studio, because I was expecting the 122 beats per minute kind of thing when I first went there. But this was totally different. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't.
Okay. That's great. Because the thing that bothers me is I'm a huge dance artist fan, and I feel like a lot of the dance that we had in the 90s and to today sort of got its roots from what you guys did.
I agree. As a matter of fact, I can't tell you, my godson knows, can tell me exactly how many songs used Chic samples.
Wow.
And went on to get great hits. It's actually something that I plan to Google for myself one day so I can speak about it from a more informed position. But a lot of it comes from that. A lot of the dance stuff came from that, because they created, Niall and Bernard were just genius when it came to understanding groove, understanding melody, understanding chant, and understanding what was in the hearts and minds of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was one of the things. They really understood. Their music has a sort of a DNA, as it were, that really strikes a chord with everybody.
And I wanted your thoughts, too. Obviously, Niall's had a bit of a career resurgence, if you will, in 2013. Obviously, you know, he's been doing things for years and years, but he really came back to prominence, obviously, working with Daft Punk and Pharrell. And that song, Get Lucky, that everyone knows from 2013, that almost sounded like Chic-esque. What does it feel like to hear that song and to see your former partner doing what he needs to do?
It's wonderful. I'm so happy for him, because he's worked extremely hard. And I know it could not have been easy for him to go on after he lost his partner and friend Bernard Edwards. Mm-hmm. So to see that he could, that he stayed in there, he stayed the course, he continued to write, he continued to work, and he's overcome so many obstacles, you know, in his life, just to see that, it's just wonderful. I was moved to tears when I saw him receiving Grammys the other night.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, it was funny because I wondered what it would be like for you to see, you know, the Grammy show and him up there doing, you know, everyone going crazy. Like, everybody in the audience was going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like I was receiving it.
Well, you were. That's awesome. Can I ask you as well, what do you think, because I often feel like Chic for me is like, to me, like the gold standard when it comes to that era of music. Like, I think, you know, some of your music, if you play that anywhere, people will know it immediately. And it was like a standard. What do you think differentiated Chic at the time from other groups that were in that similar vein?
That's a good question, Kelly. I think there are a couple things. I think, first of all, the lyric sort of really spoke to how people were feeling. You know, it was a time in our country's history where things were just beginning to be less divisive here in this country. Mm-hmm. And Chic really came in and brought a message of togetherness and of love, and it's okay to have fun, it's okay to be happy, it's okay to dance, it's okay for people from all walks of life to get together and just have this big party, you know. So I think that's one of the things that made it really important. It was such inclusive of everybody in society, and that happened at the right time in history.
And what do you feel like, we've talked about Niall and such, and I know I want to get to where you are now because I know you've sort of made a reemergence into the music scene, but when we look at some of your colleagues, if you will, the Martha Washes of the world, what do you feel like, because like, if we use Martha as an example, you know, she went on from doing the sort of disco stuff to then, you know, being involved with CNC Music Factory and Black Box and then her own sort of dance hits in the 90s, and she continues to sort of do what she needs to do. What is it like to see a lady like that's just kept going? She's like a workhorse.
You know, I love it. And what comes to mind is Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive.
Okay.
Because artists that have longevity are artists that are really able to reinvent themselves, you know, and continue to be relevant while still bringing some of that nostalgia that people want. And that's what it reminds me of. And it reminds me of how strong women are.
Mm-hmm. This is
you know, if I can put a feminist plug out there, you know, we have always been the ones to like, well, no, I don't want to say anything that's anti-male. So please understand when I say this, that women have been able to do that because we've had to be more adaptable because of the various roles that we've played in society. And yeah, that's my bias.
Okay, I'm good.
I'll admit that.
I'm quite happy. That's fine. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Alpha Anderson, formerly of the group Chic. And you can follow her, by the way, on Twitter at Former Lady of Chic Alpha. So make sure you follow her, FLOC Alpha, on Twitter. Now, I wanted to ask you, was it a difficult transition for you when sort of Chic disbanded? Because like you'd mentioned earlier, you were on this fast-moving train, and then it just seems like the society's musical taste, if you will, sort of changed really quickly, and things sort of got a bit weird. Was it hard for you when things sort of went their separate ways?
It was hard. It was very hard. It was painful. And the thing that made it easier for me, the transition a little bit easier for me, is that I got a call from Luther asking me, because he was just, at that point, he was just getting ready to go out and do his tour. And he asked me if I would come in and be one of his background singer dancers. And I, you know, really grabbed that like it was a brass ring for me. I grabbed that opportunity and went on. So that's one of the things that made it a lot easier for me. So I didn't have to mourn in a dark room for months and months. But I was deeply saddened.
I can only imagine. And when I wanted to ask as well, you know, there was a strong female contingent in Chic with you and Norma Jean and Lucy. Was there a good dynamic between all of you? And I know Norma Jean, you know, left, and then it was sort of you and Lucy. But how was the female dynamic there, being the front members of this group?
Well, there was some tension, you know, And as a matter of fact, we are working together now and we're talking about it. And that's one of the things that we sort of want to continue to explore. But we were able to work through it all, you know, but it's like we understand now that girls or little girls really have that type of tension between them and that jealousy and that rivalry. But women empower each other. Mm-hmm. So it was a growing experience for us.
And now what is the plans for you guys? Because I know that you guys are going to work together. So what can we expect from you guys in the future?
Well, we are working on putting an act together. And that act will include some of the hits from that era, including Chic. But also it will include some of the things that we're doing now, because I'm also working on a solo CD that I'm very, very excited about. And Norma and Lucy are working on projects, both individually and together. So we'd like to put a show together. Mm-hmm. We're working on putting a show together that will showcase all of the things that we're doing, you know. And we're also going to be a part of, and I don't know whether or not Jim Arena has mentioned this stuff, and thank you, Jim, I have to say this, for including me in your book. But as a result of that work, there is now going to be a show, a Ladies of Disco show.
Oh, great.
And
okay.
Norma, Lucy and I will be a part of it, along with Martha Wash and Linda Clifford and others, you know. But that's going to happen, and we're going to be bringing that sound back to you. And not on record, but those of us who actually sang those songs will be going out and sharing that spirit and that love mm-hmm. with people of this generation.
When we look back at what you guys were doing with Chic, in those moments, in those years when everything was just crazy and you guys were all over the place, can you let me know if there's there was another band or an artist out there that really sort of spoke to you in that era that you guys sort of, you know, kept an eye on?
Let me think about that. Well, you know, we always loved Donna Summer.
Right.
You know, and we would always run into, and we liked what the Village People were doing.
Oh,
because
cool.
it was sort of similar. So I think those were the artists at that time, at the time that we were actually touring.
Okay. And last question, Alpha. You know, I've had the opportunity to interview you now and speak to Martha and even France Jolie about sort of being in this genre of music. What do you want to leave your fans with? Like, what do you want them to know about the importance of disco and just that time, and that it transcends through today? Because like I mentioned to you before we started doing the interview, when I, you know, play music from Chic at weddings that I DJ or events that I DJ, everybody loses their mind. And I find it's really great that, you know, you'll get like a 10-year-old running up there along with a 55-year-old that's getting down. And it brings people together.
And that's the message. And that's the power of the music, the power to lift people out of themselves for that moment and to bring them together in joy and happiness, so that we have that happiness and we're all dancing together on this earth as one. And that creates a type of unity that I think is good for the planet.
This is true. I would agree with you. Alpha, thank you so much. It's been such a treat to speak to you today. Thank you so, so much.
You're quite welcome.
That is Alpha Anderson, formerly of the group Chic. And again, you can follow her on Facebook and Twitter, former Lady of Chic, Alpha.
Aww, freak out. You're free. Say chic. Freak out. Aww, freak out. You're free. Say chic. Your dad.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is awesome singer-songwriter Trevor Dahl, who goes by the name Plug In Stereo.
Hello, thank you very much.
First of all, you got to tell me, why Plug In Stereo?
When I first started out, I went by my name, Trevor Dahl, and then I was on the internet, you know, MySpace and all that stuff, and I was looking for different ideas just to go by a moniker instead of my name, just because a lot of my influences at the time have been doing it, and I thought it was a cool idea, so...
Okay.
I went with Plug In Stereo and just haven't changed it, you know, since I was 16, so.
That's awesome. Well, it's very funky, and it sticks out, I find, so
oh,
that's
cool.
A good thing to have. So talk to us about, you know, how you got going. Like, were you always wanting to be a singer-songwriter, like, in the music industry?
Ever since I can remember, I've been writing poems and trying to put songs together since I was in elementary school. I played a lot of sports growing up, but when I was 12 in sixth grade, I really started to pick up the guitar and got really into music and songwriting and, started writing songs for friends and girls and whatever in middle school, and then once high school came around, I really took it seriously, and then I ended up leaving high school after my sophomore year. I dropped out and started touring and really went for it, so yeah.
Was that scary to be like, I'm leaving school and gonna do this?
Yeah, it was a little scary, but at the time, it was like the only thing that made sense to me.
Okay.
When I was sitting in class, I would just be writing poems in the back of class, not paying attention, didn't get the best grades. So, you know, at the time, it was just like, I have to leave and try my best at music and see what happens. So.
And how were the parental unit about you bailing on school?
They were a little skeptical in the beginning, but they totally support me. My dad's a teacher, so he was really skeptical. He was like, oh, you know, education's really important, blah, blah, blah. So I understand that, but... For me, he understood that music was my passion and that I would really pursue it and I wouldn't half-ass it, you know. So.
Have you gone back to get your GED at all, or is that not yet happening?
No, it's kind of a thing that I don't want to. I want to not have a backup plan, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I just want to go for it 100%, so.
That's awesome. That I can see as like almost like a not having a fail-safe. Like, you got to do it.
I feel like when people have a backup plan or a plan B, they end up not really giving it their all at what they really want to do, and you only live once, so I don't want to mess that up.
Now, you're on the road quite a bit. Right now, you're touring with Cody Simpson. Mm-hmm. First of all, tell us actually how you got on the tour. How did that even happen?
I don't even know. I don't know. It happened pretty quickly, and I was really stoked about it. Me and Cody got together, and we wrote some music together a little while ago, like a month or two ago.
Okay.
And after that, we had discussed a little bit of touring, and they had the tour coming up, and they offered us to do it, and I thought, absolutely, you know, it was really cool for them to let us do it, so I'm stoked about it. It's awesome.
Is it a different vibe being on his tour? Now, I know this is obviously the acoustic sessions, and it's not his other sort of stuff, which is more poppy and, mm-hmm. I guess, more produced, if you will.
Yeah.
But his fans are coming from that fan base.
Totally.
Anyways. Is it interesting for you to sort of have a chance at grabbing those people?
Yeah, it's great. I'm stoked about it. It's also a little different for me. Like, I'm more acoustic based with my recordings, but even this tour, we usually have a full band, like with bass and drums and keys. So it was a different experience overall, and I'm really excited to kind of play my new songs and see what the fans see if they dig it as well as, you know, because they're so used to listening to Cody's different style of music. So I'm anxious to see if they like it, and so far they really have. It's been really good.
Now, you mentioned you were writing with Cody a couple months ago. How did that transpire? And do you write for other artists like often?
Sometimes I do. I write songs for the most part, and whenever they don't work for me, I try to pitch them to other artists. But I wrote one song for a band called One Direction. It was on their last album called Take Me Home. It was a bonus song.
Okay.
And it was called Truly Madly Deeply. So that happened on accident. I wrote it for myself. I didn't think it was good for me. And they picked it up. So it was
wow.
really cool.
That's awesome.
But Cody was the first person I wrote with for him. So we don't know if the song's going to be on his album yet. But it's a good song, I think so. So we'll see.
And how would you describe yourself? Because I know, like, you know, when you read about a certain artist, everyone always wants to label you as something. But how would you label you?
Oh, man, I don't... That's so tough, you know? I don't know. I just think... Because with every EP and with every song, I try to do something different. So it's hard for me to say I'm a singer-songwriter, or it's hard for me to say I'm an anthemic-style artist. I don't know. Every song is... I try to make different. I try to make everything exciting and new, and I don't like when I listen to artists and every song is kind of the same feel throughout the album. It kind of gets boring for me. So it's hard for me to put a label on it, you know.
Well, you struck me as that even just by saying that you didn't want to have school as a backup. Like, I feel like you're always wanting to push yourself and
exactly.
such. So when it comes to songwriting, like, I'm assuming because you don't want to sound samey,
yeah.
do you write things, like, do you have a different way of writing each time? Like, one time you might start with the melody, another time you're starting with, like, percussion, or, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I write, different time, different things every time. Sometimes a lot of the time I'll write, like, in my studio, and I'll pick up a guitar, put a guitar track down, think of some melodies, put that down, then put some drums down, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes I'll just have some lyrics on my phone that I'll base the song around, or sometimes I'll have a riff on the guitar that I'll base the song around. So it's all different. It's just a matter of what I'm feeling at that moment and what's inspiring me, so...
Yeah. How important is social media to you? Like, because right now it seems, especially for singer-songwriters, I would say it's a great way of getting your name out and
it's
your
It's very, very
out.
Important. I think it's very important for everybody right now. I think that within the last 10 years or even 5 years especially, it's really shifted from radio and TV and all that to a lot of it is based on the internet. So how you portray yourself and how active you are is really, really important. So I try to be as active as possible. And I try to respond to a lot of fans and show them that I care, and I'm not just some person that just... you know, does his own thing. He doesn't really notice them, because I really, really appreciate all their feedback and their love and support. So
I was speaking to Cody earlier, actually, and speaking of that fan support, obviously he has girls that just scream his name constantly. Yeah. And like right now, I know that the ladies that have been waiting outside for him and you have mm-hmm. been out there since 2 a.m. What does it mean, though, when someone comes to you, whether it's a teenage girl or someone else, who says, like, your song has changed me? Like, what is that? Like, how does that even process?
It's amazing, because it's what I've always strived for as a musician and artist, is because the reason I got into music was because whenever I had a hard day or whenever I had any sort of emotion, music always kind of helped me growing up, you know what I mean? So I think that being able to control other people's emotions or trigger other people's emotions with my music is like all I've ever wanted, so it's really great.
And what can we expect next from you? You're on this Acoustic Sessions tour, and what's going to happen as 2014 sort of plays out?
We have a tour with Ryan Beatty in February, which will be really cool. It just got announced, and the dates are coming out in the next couple of days, and so I'm stoked about that. And we're just going to be touring as much as possible and staying as busy as possible. And I'm going to be finishing up my album, because I just put out an EP on the 7th, and so now I'm just finishing up more songs and picking the last kind of 5 or 6 for the album. So,
do you like to record on the road, or does it not matter where you're recording?
I like to record at home,
okay.
or in L.A., so either Portland or L.A. for me. It's hard to record on the road. It's kind of almost impossible
okay.
you have to get a good sound into a... Yeah, there's no vocal booths or anything like that, so, yeah.
Perfect. Well, Trevor, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That is singer-songwriter Trevor Dahl right here, Plug In Stereo, on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Kelly Alexander Show. And, of course, a big thank you going out to my guests, Tony Martinez, James Arena, Alpha Anderson, and Plug In Stereo. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Danielle Barone. The first step to having something in your life is to see yourself having it in your mind. As always, thanks so much for hanging out. We really, really appreciate your time. And of course, check out all of our social media on Twitter, @KAlexanderShow, Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, all of our interviews on YouTube, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.